Thanks for taking the time to listen to this NHS Employers podcast. For all the latest NHS HR workforce information, visit www.nhsemployers.org.
Hello, my name is Michelle Waite and I'm an Assistant Director in the Development and Employment Team in NHS Employers. International recruitment has always been key in the NHS, but we have seen it increase substantially over the last 2 years, especially to support the government's 50,000 nurse target. It is key that organisations ensure that they or their recruitment agencies they work with recruit ethically. It is also very important to ensure that internationally recruited staff feel welcomed and part of the organisation and their local community, which in turn then encourages them to stay in the UK. In this podcast, we are going to discuss the benefits of NHS England's Stay and Thrive programme. The programme has been trialled in two regions, the North East and Yorkshire and the South West. Through a series of 5 learning events that brought together 43 organisations across 11 systems, a community of action was formed with a collective mission to help internationally recruited staff to stay and thrive in the NHS. Rooted in research from the University of Huddersfield, the learning events identified 4 pillars to support the retention of internationally recruited staff. The 4 pillars are: create strong foundations, make new recruits feel welcome, build belonging, and finally, maximise personal and professional growth. These pillars tackle the practical, professional, and systematic cultural issues faced by internationally recruited staff and have driven positive change across the Stay and Thrive community. The community reaches all professional groups, including nurses, midwives, doctors, and allied health professionals, and all are represented in the Stay and Thrive work. I'd like to introduce our 3 speakers today. Simon Littlefield is Chief Nurse of Integrated Care at St George's Epsom and St Helier NHS Trust. In 2022, Simon was the Interim Chief Nurse for Epsom and St Helier NHS Trust and was inspired by the Stay and Thrive We Nurses Twitter takeover to take action in welcoming internationally recruited staff to the Trust. He organised to personally take a new cohort of international nurses to see the sights of London, demonstrating how strong leadership support can help set the culture in welcoming new recruits. Our second speaker is Ruby Faruqi. She is a Stay and Thrive matron at Doncaster and Bassett Law Teaching Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. Ruby arrived in the UK in 2002 and first worked at Manchester Royal Infirmary before joining Doncaster and Bassett Law as a matron in 2017. She was seconded into her current role as a Stay and Thrive matron in January 2022 and focuses on the recruitment and retention of international nurses in the Trust. And our final speaker is Mark Doblas. He is an internationally educated nurse who graduated in 2008 in his home country of the Philippines. He has worked in various specialities in healthcare as well as in training. He arrived in the UK in the last quarter of 2018 as part of the international recruitment campaign of the Royal United Hospitals Bath NHS Foundation Trust and worked to become a clinical practice facilitator, supporting international nurses in their transition to life in the UK and to UK nursing practice. Now he leads a team of facilitators for international nurses in the same trust. So, Mark and Ruby, you are both international nurse recruits. What made you come and work in the UK, and also what made you want to stay? Mark, can I start with you first?
I didn't have enough resources to jumpstart my nursing career overseas, although there were a lot of opportunities in other countries which offer better compensation packages. The UK is one of the countries that do not really ask for a lot of investment in terms of procuring the documents, the examination and all that, because we all are reimbursed with the initial resources we put up to come to this country. So that was the initial thought process in mind why I wanted to come to the UK. And I used to work in Singapore, in Dubai before coming to the UK. And I feel like I didn't really have that opportunity to become fully integrated into the country and the system because they don't offer citizenship. And in this country, I would have that opportunity to be part of to be a citizen in this country. And in my personal experience, this is the longest that I've been in a particular country. And I like staying in the UK, and I think I will stay for more years, all because when I first joined in the clinical area, since, as you mentioned a while ago, I used to be in training, I didn't really have that bedside exposure to clinical nursing, that solid bedside exposure. Now, in the UK, they really help their new starters transition effectively into the nursing practice in the UK. And that was what really captured my my attention to come to the UK. And having gone through that same journey, I also realized that it's very important. It's very important for people to stay. And that is also the very fuel why I'm staying in the UK and in the NHS, because I get to do that part to all the other new starters, to be able to help them to be able to stay and thrive in this chosen country and workplace.
Ruby, can you also just explain why you decided to come and what's made you stay?
So why I decided to come, there are several reasons. My main reason for migrating was financial, because my dad was not keeping in good health and I was the eldest in the family. And he, as I moved into the UK just before the year before that, he took early retirement because of his health. And he was the sole breadwinner of the family. So, you know, that was kind of one of the main reasons, the financial reason that I had to migrate, sort of to support, financial support my family back home, my mom, my dad, as well as two brothers. And the other reason was that I wanted to advance in my career. I'm very ambitious and I wanted to develop in the nursing profession itself. And the UK offers a lot of opportunities. Like initially, I was able to specialize in diabetes and work as a diabetes specialist nurse, which was like always a dream for me. And UK offered me that opportunity to develop in my career. And the reason I stayed here is because, I was given when I came to Manchester, I was given a 5-year visa, and my initial plan was like to return back after earning the money I needed. But soon I realized I was feeling very comfortable here. I had great friends. I had met some lovely people. And I found overall, you know, that I was adapting to a new culture, and I was feeling very, very comfortable to the point where I didn't actually want to return back home. So I got married, I had my children. So I soon sort of, you know, kind of settled in and stayed just because of the positive experiences I've had.
Simon, you got involved with Stay and Thrive later. How did you hear about the pilot, and how did it help you to do something different at your trust?
Yeah, I did join late, and I remember seeing it on Twitter. And actually, I knew that this international recruitment was going on in our organisation. So for me, it was a little bit about natural curiosity. I want to know what's going on, and I want to meet people. And my background in nursing is community, and you know, I have a really strong sense of creating that culture. So it started with me just popping my head round the door and saying hello. And I feel very strongly as at leaders that we are responsible for a culture in our organisation. And that cost me nothing. It cost me absolutely nothing to say hello and welcome and just say things like, you know, just ask, how are you settling in? Where have you arrived from? And what can I do to help you? And that opened up a conversation. And I feel really strongly that's our role, that we have intentionally brought people from other countries over to the UK to help us. And so, you know, don't we have a responsibility in return to understand what people need and what would help them to stay here? And I just really love that banner. It was something I could get behind and promote and have conversations that wasn't just me saying, oh, come on, let's do this. I could really get behind this. This is on Twitter. This is a movement. This is something national that we can share and be. And I just love it. Why would we not want people to stay and thrive? It just summed it up to me. And so that enabled me to have different conversations. And I think, you know, honestly, I just poking my head around the corner and saying, hello, who are you? And I think done my message is it's as simple as that.
Mark and Ruby, you both said actually this is sort of a similar thing, that it was that you felt that you were part of something and helped by your, you know, your teams or your community to stay. So what specifically helped you to become part of your team at the Trust?
Well, because I am involved in the international recruitment, and there's this campaign so it started in the Southwest and Northeastern Yorkshire. And so there was a huge campaign about it. So I was asked, I didn't really have any idea at all when it started. And then, but of course, with the tagline itself, Stay and Thrive, I then realized, oh, it must be something to do with retention. But during that time, we were still just in the part where we were actively recruiting. So we weren't really at the point where we were thinking of retention at some point. But then when more and more internationally educated nurses came to join the organization, that's when we realized that they've been staying and we want to keep it that way. So we wanted to know what is working well within the organization, and we wanted to have that platform to be able to share to other organizations as well on how to help other trusts to keep their internationally educated nurses. And from then on, that's when we got involved. And I've been involved from the very beginning of Stay and Thrive.
Ruby, what about yourself? What has been, you know, what's made you feel like you wish to stay? But what else have you done with the Stay and Thrive pilot?
For me, the reason that I've stayed, you know, within the NHS and within the UK, one of the main reason is that I feel part of the NHS and I feel part of the country, like, you know, feel like I'm accepted and I have accepted the culture, and as well as I have embraced, you know, the career development opportunities that I have got, you know, so I felt that I got support from my line managers very early on to do my master's, which really helped me gain more knowledge, more skills, and to, you know, to apply for senior roles. And that development in career was, I think, the key reason that I felt, you know, oh, yes, I can develop here. I'm not just coming here because there's a shortage of nurses. I'm coming here because, you know, I will get support to thrive. And at Doncaster, the very first cohort that we had of international nurses, unfortunately, they didn't have a very good experience. And the Trust wanted to do something different. And that's why my role was introduced to sort of, you know, bring in that pastoral element when we're recruiting and retaining nurses, to make sure that we look after them and retain them.
So you've just mentioned there that, you know, those first recruits didn't have a similar experience, and I'm assuming it hasn't all been plain sailing. So Ruby, what other challenges have you had to overcome?
One of the key challenges, the cultural differences or variations between two cultures, you know, or more than two cultures, because nurses are coming from different countries with a very different cultural background, with a very different way of working and living. And then coming to the UK, there can be a lot of cultural misunderstanding between two individuals. So, you know, could be clinical staff, could be anybody really, and the nurse, they don't understand each other. And that can lead to misunderstanding. And that can be quite challenging to deal with, because this is something that people have not encountered before. And it's very, very new. I mean, COVID hasn't helped really, because that has caused barriers with communication, because more than 50% of our communication is non-verbal, and nurses and staff have to wear masks in the ward. So that's been really, really challenging, because people just really struggling to understand, you know, because of the accent and because of the mask, it's just made it harder. So cultural misunderstandings and COVID. The other challenge that we faced is accommodation. So we didn't have this issue in the earlier cohorts, but as we had more and more cohorts arriving, we realized that Doncaster is very, very short of rental accommodation, because we're not like a university town. We don't have loads of rentals available. So we really struggled to find appropriate rental accommodation. We were not prepared for that. And we had to really work hard with the councils, with our, you know, local support systems to identify appropriate accommodation. So, yeah, these three have been quite key challenges.
So would you say that's key for accommodation before your recruits get there, really?
Yes. I mean, it's been really challenging to source accommodation before they arrive, you know. So, I mean, we do provide free accommodation for 3 months for all the nurses. And if you imagine the nurses coming every month, it's quite a lot of accommodation needed. So we were trying to be as proactive as possible so that we have housed the previous nurses in a different accommodation before we. So we're all sort of kind of, or I would say more kind of prepared with accommodation now as we were initially.
Simon, can I come to you next? What issues have you faced?
One of the challenges that I faced was how do we take this out of the classroom? And I was really struck by our main focus as an employer was how can we number crunch and get people through the door and get people onto wards and into services? And we hadn't really thought, I think there was a little bit going on across London around, you know, embedding people in this community, but it really struck me that what people were asking, like they knew the process. So staff coming over, workers coming over, they knew the process. They knew they had to do an OSCE. It was how to develop that beyond that. And it struck me that people had not been told the difference between a high-end supermarket and, you know, where they may get fresh food, for example, how to get a bus to work, what to ask for, how to pay for it. And these, you know, we're not talking in where they have come from in their own countries. And it's quite normalised. And us living in London, to talk about an Oyster card, it's common language and it's not something that we give a second thought to. You suddenly bring a cohort of people over who have not got that language, and how do we get them to experience it? You know, and I'm actually quite fortunate in that our organisation is quite diverse, and our group chief nurse herself is an overseas international recruit. And so I really felt, you know, it wasn't for me to solve, and I thought there was a language around this is for us to solve. But for me, the challenge was how to engage people that were already here and staying and thriving already in our organisation, and how to tap into them to be role models and to give advice. I mean, I'm married to a South African. I got some home advice at home as well about what it was like to come to a country, and that's always helpful. And I think for me, the challenge was not to rush in and be the saviour that's going to rescue everything, but to utilise resources around me and make it meaningful and really... you know, stressing that bit about how do we take this out of the classroom, because people know the process.
And how did you get then those international recruits on board to help you out?
So I think there was a refreshing excitement about it, actually. And I think me in my position as chief nurse stepping into that space showed an interest. And I think, you know, if I'm talking to other senior leaders or other chief nurses, people are looking to you to set the direction of travel. And I think stepping into that space and me connecting and me being visible and being in the room with them and saying, you know, to an individual, you know, how did you get on? What are you looking for? And can I bring these people? And I knew who my workforce was immediately around me. I just needed to gauge and say, did you find it difficult? What are your challenges? Would you mind sharing your story? And I think the power of story, and we did I facilitated a really focused session on storytelling. Of some people in our organisation already who had got promotion since being in our organisation. And, you know, right from our chief nurse down to the librarian who had come from overseas, just telling their story about and sharing tips. And, you know, honestly, I learned so much about what I could get in my local area. And I remember two standout things that I will learn is, number one, the bus driver is your best friend. Bus driver knows everything. So if you can ask the bus driver anything, that's it. And somebody else said to me, one of our physiotherapists said to the group, when you come to the UK, a good pair of shoes and a good coat, because that's all anyone's ever going to see. Because, you know, chances are it's not going to be hot and sunny. But it was really nice because I think we broke it down and not about work. And I think that's a really important thing, is just to connect two people. We're all people. I struggle in life as much as anybody else. So we can all share tips with everyone.
Some really good advice there, Simon. Mark, as a clinical practice facilitator, have you experienced any other barriers for internationally recruited staff?
Yes, there has been a lot of barriers, including, well, let's start with clinical barriers. These nurses from overseas come with a wealth of experience, and they come with that foundation knowledge of nursing But when they come to the UK, there is a slight difference in the practice. And that's something that we have to bridge that gap. The common culture in most settings is that they think that when nurses, just because they're nurses, they should just crack on and know what they're supposed to be doing, when in fact, there is that knowledge gap that we need to assess and we need to bridge. I just want to cite an example. Say, for example, Mental Health Act, safeguarding, social care, these are concepts that are new to them. They're not familiar with these concepts. So as a clinical practice facilitator, we need to come in to deliver training in order for them to adapt well in the clinical setting. Like they're not aware of how discharges work in this country. So yes, so those are the main barriers that we consider. But overall, generally, it's really about the transition to the new workplace, transition to the new country, and then transition to taking an examination.
So I'd like to ask you next, what specifically, thinking about the Stay and Thrive program, what benefits has that been able to give you? Simon, can we come to you first?
So I'll go back to me. I think what's allowed me to do is connect wider than my own organisation. And I think that's really, you can feel very isolated or you can be very introspective in your organisation. And for me, reaching out to Twitter and having a wider audience and getting tips from other people, joining the forums, listening to people, that in itself is just invaluable for me. You know, I have a great saying of still with pride. If someone's doing something really good, you can borrow it. It's fine. And everyone just really wants to share things. It's wonderful. And I think the Stay and Thrive banner has allowed that to happen. I think it's a really, really clear message. It's enabled me at board level and with our senior leaders to have a conversation around something that isn't just, how are we going to work with our international recruitment? It's a much clearer banner. We want people to stay and we want people to thrive here. And that's a really clear message. So it has allowed me to have a conversation and almost give me a program of work to say we're part of this movement. And I think as a leader or as an executive on a board, that is a really nice way of framing what you're aiming to do. And so that for me is what has provided me a framework, a conversation and a network of people.
Do you think it's helped your board members and other senior managers that you trust get on board as well?
I think so. I think they were curious and wanted to do something. And I guess everybody is slightly busy and everyone's always busy being busy and doing their day jobs. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but I think, you know, everybody always has the intention to want to do something. And everybody was really committed. So I never got the sense that people weren't interested or that they were not engaged. Actually, I was actually quite pleased. Everybody wanted to do something. And I guess nobody had the one thing to corral around, to get around, and nobody to lead it. And I felt that was my space to occupy, was to say, okay, well, I'm giving you something. And people just fell behind it. And we had a good conversation. We've just expanded into our community services now with our latest international recruitment, and we're having the same conversation about what does it mean to join us, and you know, you're part of our community now, we want you to be part of our community, but what does that mean to you? How can we welcome you? How can we make that so, you know, understanding time zones and time differences, you know, giving somebody a shift that starts at 8 o'clock, but that's the time you can call your family, you know, can we be a bit more accommodating in those first, or not a bit more accommodating, can we accommodate what people's needs are in a much more flexible way? And, you know, for me, it's been a wonderful opportunity just to have a banner to work behind and a purpose.
Mark, what's the Stay and Thrive programme given you?
The Stay and Thrive programme has given me that platform to be able to share to other organisations what we've been doing and also to learn from other organisations. I think that with the NHS being a very huge organization, that we are going through the same thing and we all are going through the same experiences, and people are somehow approaching it in slightly different ways. And there come a point where you realize you may be treading on something new that you're not quite familiar with. And for all you know, some other organization already has a solution to that situation and you can learn from it. And that has been one of the most wonderful thing about Stay and Thrive. And also with Stay and Thrive, I was able to build a very good network within the entire country. I've linked with organizations in the Southeast, in the East, and then I've forged very good partnership with other leaders in many different organizations, forming a collaborative work just to be able to find solutions and better ways of working for many different things that we will have to go through in the future. Knowing that international recruitment may have been there for quite a long time, there isn't really a clear guidebook on how to do it. And I think that's one of the aim of Stay and Thrive, to be able to just have that opportunity for everyone to share ideas and to be able to create that bundle so people can have sort of a guide on how to tread on this journey, especially moving on to retention. I think personally, it's our obligation. It's a responsibility that apart from ethically recruiting nurses overseas, it also is our responsibility to be able to make them feel welcome, make them transition effectively, and make them stay and enjoy their newfound life in the UK.
Really great to hear that so many trusts are collaborating in this way. Ruby, what would you say that the Stay and Thrive program has given you?
At a personal level, I would say the Stay and Thrive program, because funded my post, and I got the opportunity to work as a Stay and Thrive matron, which has given me immense job satisfaction at a personal level, because I'm able to help nurses, you know, in those initial stages of their career when they're taking their very first steps, you know, whether it's OSCE preparation or whether it's the needed support of the ward. If they're not happy, I do have, you know, the ability to facilitate an internal transfer to another area and help them, you know, so the managerial support that they might need, I'm able to provide them at the right time and see them really kind of flourish, you know, and some of the new nurses, they have kind of progressed into a band 6 role, and it's really, really nice to see them develop, and it provides a lot of happiness to me, you know, to see them growing and bringing their families over, and then hearing stories from them about how the kids are happy at school, how they join the football team, and you know, seeing that they are building that belonging really within Doncaster and within the hospital. So that's really, really kind of, I would say, you know, really positive to get that feedback. Overall, as an organization, I think Stay and Thrive has really helped, because it has helped retain our nurses. Like I was saying, initially we had issues, but we don't have those issues at all. All our nurses are with us, you know, so that is really good to see that they are staying. And when I interview, I hear from the nurses saying that my friend is at Doncaster, and she's said really positive things about the trust. So she's also applied. So I can see that it's, you know, pulling more and more nurses over to our trust. And that's really good to see. And like Mark and Simon were saying, it allows us to network with each other, because all our organizations, you know, every hospital is trying to recruit internationally. And it's about setting those standards, really sharing best practice, discussing issues. And it gives us that platform to do that.
So I'm assuming now you've all started on the Stay and Thrive journey that you aren't just going to stop there. So what are your plans for the future, Ruby?
We have started the internal satisfaction survey with the nurses. So we want their feedback. We want to hear back from them so that we can shape our program according to their feedback. So, you know, that's something new. So, you know, so that we can incorporate their views. And if things need to change, you know, if they need to improve, then we can be guided by the feedback from that survey. We've also, you know, trying to put some career development opportunities. Like, we are developing a pathway specifically for the international nurses, because we recognize the fact that they are not aware of the developmental opportunities available. So it kind of gives them an overview of what's out there with regards to career options, and then they can make a better choice. So these are the two things, like, you know, that we are kind of strengthening on.
Simon, what would you say is next for Epsom and St Helier.
So I'm really excited about the future. And again, for me, it's more, you know, I have people, you know, a team that do the educational aspect. And I think, you know, we're really robust on that. And we've learned through this process on how to do that. For me, our next step is how do we embed the community and how do we take that forwards? And actually really interesting, I'm just developing a community garden at the moment, which is a... it's a intergenerational and cultural sharing space. So a share together, grow together garden, with the concept being that we want to engage with a local school as well about sharing stories. You know, that's our a new avenue about how do we make people feel welcome and local and part of something, and the opportunity to talk to other people, share their stories, share what's going on in their lives, and grow and share together.
We're nearing the end of our podcast, and so I have one final question which I'd like to ask all of you. Mark, if I could come to you first again, is there any advice you would give to listeners who haven't started on this Stay and Thrive journey? So what one thing would you say is your takeaway which will help international recruited staff to stay and thrive in their trust or system?
It's always best to have that buddy as an organization to be able to learn from and share with. And the Stay and Thrive is a very good venue for that. I also think that we too can create something bigger and work more collaboratively in ensuring that these nurses stay and thrive. Stay and Thrive has been there for, I think, a year now, more than a year now, and it's been making waves. And hopefully it can reach other organizations that may not have really heard of the Stay and Thrive program yet. We've already planted the seed, so we need to cultivate it to make it grow bigger. One thing I can really say, if they're recruiting internationally educated nurses, it's best that they build on a very robust induction, because from that very beginning of the journey, that's when they can already determine if it's a place they would want to stay and thrive. Like in the Royal United Hospitals in Bath, we realized that we have been supporting our internationally educated nurses. However, we haven't really had the chance to support the wards who are supporting these internationally educated nurses. So we created that manager's guide in order for them to understand the international nurses and in their perspective as well. So that would create that good blend of understanding in both sides, the one that needs support and the one that supports them. So I think that should be part of a very good induction pack.
Ruby, what would be your takeaway tip?
So my takeaway tip for the nurses, international nurses, is that they should, look after themselves, like emotionally, psychologically, because it's a very big step to move out of your country into another country and leave your family behind. So, I always say to all the nurses, self-care is not selfish, you know, so you need to look after yourself. So life should not just become just, you know, going to work and coming back. They need to have some extracurricular activities, some time for themselves where they can relax, and also sort of identify some support systems like buddies, friends, you know, so that they do take time out to relax and to look after their well-being.
And Simon, finally, what advice would you give to a trust just starting out on this journey?
So my advice would be to other chief nurses and board members would be to be courageous and curious, and to take off your uniform and see your part in the process. And that would be my advice.
Thank you. So that is the end of our podcast. Thank you to Ruby, Simon and Mark for sharing their experiences and knowledge today of Stay and Thrive. And I hope they have provided you with some key thoughts and ideas so you can play your part to support and encourage your internationally recruited staff to stay and develop in your organisation. Thank you.